You've done fascinating work that you and I have talked about many times before in looking at neoadjuvant endocrine therapy, what goes on within the tumor, et cetera. What about the clinical use of neoadjuvant endocrine therapy? We see a big difference across the pond, so to speak. What's your approach?
Our approach is that neoadjuvant endocrine therapy for us is very valuable, not only because we've got an elderly population. Currently, between 40 and 45% of all patients with breast cancer are over 70. Most of these women, if they present with larger tumors, aren't suitable for neoadjuvant chemotherapy, but they are suitable for neoadjuvant endocrine therapy because with increasing age becomes increasing ER expression.
Now, this is with the intent of making them eligible for lumpectomy or just as overall treatment?
You've got two options. In the patients who aren't fit for any treatment, neoadjuvant AIs alone will often give them very prolonged responses and allow them to survive, to die of something else, if you like.
Do you ever consolidate with radiation and not do surgery?
Infrequently, we have done it. But the reality is now, with neoadjuvant AIs, you can nearly always get the tumor down to a size where you can excise the cancer, even under local anesthetic. I often say, you know, they often say to me, this patient's unfit for surgery. The reality is there are a few patients unfit for surgery, just many surgeons who are unfit to operate.
Or unfit for general anesthesia, maybe.
Yeah, unfit for general anesthesia. And now, you know, the big advance, I think, in anesthesia generally is the anesthesiologists are much more supportive of surgeons doing things under local anesthesia. So my anesthesiologist will give the patient some propofol and some pain relief during the procedure to allow me to do very major things under local anesthetic. And the fantastic thing about these patients is they're sat up in the bed at the end of the day drinking the tea while the patients have had the general anesthetics, the younger ones, are flat out. So my perspective would be, we know that the best chance of local control is to get rid of the cancer. So if you can do that, having treated them with neoadjuvant AIs, then I think that's the best way to go. And only in those patients who have got so much comorbidity, they likely die of something else, would we not consider operating.
What about the patient who wants to have breast-conserving surgery, but really that's not technically feasible?
Again, this is where neoadjuvant AIs work so well. And they work so well for a number of reasons. First of all, as I explained, most of these patients have tumors with high ER levels. In the high ER tumors, you've got a greater than 75% chance of getting a response within 3 to 4 months. And that's pretty high response rate, even for some of the more potent chemotherapies. So,
and also very little chance of progression.
Yeah, very little chance of progression. So the first thing to say is within 3 or 4 months, you can get significant reductions. The other thing we're finding is carrying on the treatment will continue to shrink the tumor. And so if you've got a very large tumor, even though at 3 months it may not be small enough to do breast conserving surgery, if you treat that patient for 6 and 9 months, you will continue to shrink it down. And point, if you like, of maximal response, you can then consider doing breast conserving surgery. The other interesting aspect about the pathology of neoadjuvant endocrine therapy is it produces a different pathological pattern of response. In over 2/3 of the women, you get a central scar in the middle of a cancer. And that scar, it's almost like the tumor implodes. It like pulls it in on itself. So you don't see that pattern at all after neoadjuvant chemotherapy. And one of the depressing aspects of operating on patients with neoadjuvant chemotherapy as a surgeon is the oncologist tells you the patient's had a complete response. You go and take the cancer out, and there are islands of cells throughout your wide excision.
So you have to do the same procedure you would have done initially then?
Yes, in a significant percentage of women who you do breast-conserving surgery after neoadjuvant chemotherapy, you're not successful with your wide excision, so you have to go back and either re-excise or do a mastectomy. The chances of incompletely excising a cancer after neoadjuvant endocrine therapy are much less, and that's because of the pattern of response. You get concentric shrinkage, whereas in about 25% of patients who have neoadjuvant chemo, you get islands of cells extending over the same area as the cancer was at the time of initial treatment.
What about neoadjuvant tamoxifen? Same thing as AIs?
Less impressive responses, not quite the same biological effects. Don't see quite so much central scarring, although you see some central scarring.
So, you know, in the United States, typically people aren't going to think about neoadjuvant endocrine therapy unless the patient's older, 70, 80 years old. In your practice, let's say you've got a 58-year-old postmenopausal woman who has a tumor that's too big for breast-conserving surgery, strongly ER-positive. Chemo, endocrine therapy, or both?
We'd have a chat with her. She'd probably end up getting neoadjuvant endocrine therapy in our center. If it was a locally advanced cancer, bigger cancer, she'd get chemo. But if it was a
4.8 centimeters.
4.8, bigger cancers, we still have that threshold probably for giving chemo. But if it was 2.8, she'd get endocrine therapy.
Interesting.